Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steve and I are together in the Cleveland studio. Good to see you, man. How you doing?
Good. In the Cleveland studio, like we have another studio. Oh, like we a West Coast studio.
We've had plenty of, you never know. Something could happen.
True.
And we wouldn't want archival episodes of the show to be confused. Second of all, we've done shows from on the road before.
Fair.
All right. Anyway, the show of in trial continued for the entire week. Yep. Lots and lots of witnesses. Lots of police officers testifying that they thought Darren Chauvin's behavior was inappropriate, and a doctor said that he believed that the actions of Chauvin caused his death. So the whole he was going to die of a drug overdose thing.
So we need to dig into that a little bit more, specifically the doctor. Now, the other police testifying that he wasn't using standard procedure, this wasn't, you know, their normal protocol, and they believe that he used excessive force, that's very big, right? Because you have people, because you have this idea of a standard, okay, what would a reasonable police officer in a similar position, what would they do, right? And when you have other police officers, right, from the same, you know, some from the same actual precinct and other, you know, professionals coming
in. Same force.
You know, like same force, but I mean, the one guy was, he like trained with the LAPD and things like that. When you have that many people either who work alongside him or in the same profession saying he wasn't using the, you know, appropriate standard of care, so to speak, like that's devastating for the defense, right?
Sure.
But what's even more devastating, which is one of the things I was worried about, was that was going to be hard for the state and the prosecution was the cause of death, right? Because there was this argument that he had, you know, with the drugs that he had in his system, the meth, the fentanyl, whatever, and he had a weak heart. And so between the meth, between the fentanyl, between the weak heart, his heart could have gave out. The fentanyl could have, and fentanyl is very lethal. We know it.
Sure.
I mean, it's caused a terrible epidemic in our country. But so with all that combined, there may have been enough, right, for the defense to come and say, you can't pinpoint which one of these for sure killed him. Right. So you can't necessarily say that, you know, Officer Chauvin's actions were the cause of his death. Right. Or had something to do with it because the fentanyl could have killed him in 10 minutes no matter what. Or the meth could have killed him in X amount of time no matter what. So what happened this week, though, you had a pulmonary specialist, you know, a toxicologist coming on and reading the results. The pulmonary specialist says, look, you know, it was directly because of Derek Chauvin's knee to the neck that George Floyd wasn't receiving oxygen and was losing oxygen, right? And, you know, he explains why, because police say, oh, if you're talking, you're breathing. Well, every time you talk, you exhale. And as you talk more, you lose more oxygen, right? And so it got to a point where George Floyd's body had no oxygen in it whatsoever, and Chauvin stayed on top of him for an extended minute and a half beyond that point where George Floyd had no oxygen in his body, right? And so we all understand that, you know, humans need oxygen to live, to breathe, brain function, heart, everything else, and he was out of it. So that was particularly devastating because what that says is, like, look, it's not because of the drugs that he was losing oxygen. It was because the knee on the back of his neck was cutting off his supply of oxygen. And every time he breathed out for help or, you know, to ask the officer to get off of him, he lost more and more oxygen. And it was directly because of Chauvin's actions, right? So then they had a toxicologist come on and say, as it refers to the level, the drugs in his system, yeah, they were there, but it was the equivalent of what you would, you know, find illegal for a DUI stop. You know, I mean, the percentages were there, but they weren't lethal, right? And so the toxicologist is basically saying, no, it wasn't the drugs that killed him. It was his lack of oxygen, which was caused directly by the man sitting on top of him with his knee, with the knee in his neck. And those two things are really devastating. Now, there was a lot of focus on, well, George Floyd let out a yell, and it sounded like he said, I ate too many drugs, right? Now, the defense tried to plant that. They tried to get that going. They tried to get it in the jury's head. And the problem with that was, you know, they get people on the stand and they say, what does it sound like he said? And, all the witnesses said, I don't know. I can't tell. It's inaudible. So the defense would come back and say, does it sound like he said, I ate too many drugs? And the one guy says, yeah, sure. And then, you know, prosecution comes back on cross-examination and says, so does you sure he sounds like, are you sure that's what he said? And the prosecution, without leading, right, without leading, they said, okay, how about this? We're going to play the extended version of this, and we want you to listen to what he says, and you tell us, based off of what you hear and how the defense questioned you before, what you think he said, right? So they play it back. And without being led, that same witness who said, yeah, sure, I guess he could have said I ate too many drugs, which makes no sense, right? Who says that? But fine.
Right.
The same witness comes back and says, it sounds like he said, I ain't do any drugs, right? Which is...
Which people do say.
Which people do say. And look, whether he, you know, like...
People who are doing drugs say, I ain't do any
right.
drugs.
Right. And I mean, so... And the first time I heard it, I thought, it sounds like he said, I ain't do any drugs, right? I ain't do any drugs. Fine. Which makes more sense, right? When you're trying to get out of an arrest, saying I ate too many drugs is probably not the way to go. But you know, you've got a guy under duress. But the point of it is, a big deal was made about that, right? The defense really wanted to push that as a narrative, as something, as an indicator to say, look, I mean, the guy even said he ate too many drugs, so he probably had too many drugs in his system. Therefore, the drugs killed him. That's the direction that they were trying to go. And they really got, you know, kind of crossed over on their own sort of presentation of a theory, which, again, is just not good for the defense. I think it's good for the prosecution. And the defense has an uphill climb, right? Like, they really have an uphill climb in trying to – because these witnesses for a prosecutor have been a dream. You know, you had texted me and said, well, you know, they're going to have some young kids on there. I don't know how I feel. I'm like, well – the problem with kids for a defense attorney is you go at a kid too hard, you look bad, right?
Sure.
And you get that kid to cry, you break him down. Yeah, maybe I can't look at what that kid and take it what it says seriously. But now, you know, caring adult is going to look at you kind of like, man, why would you do that to a kid, right? So now as a defense attorney, you have to be really careful. So I thought it was a smart move by the prosecution to use the young witnesses, who are all older now, by the way. Not that much, but they're all a year older than what they were when this all happened. But there's a lot going for the prosecution at this point. My main concern was the cause of death. I think that they've done a good job of putting witnesses up there to make it a really uphill climb to get the defense to try to convince a jury that the drugs could have caused Floyd's death, right? I mean, I think that what they've done relatively effectively, and I can't say 400% because obviously we're dealing with people, but I think they've kind of erased the reasonable doubt as to what caused George Floyd's death, and the cause points to Derek Chauvin and his actions on that day with his knee on the man's neck for, you know, nearly nine minutes.
Yep.
And that's you know, like, yeah, I'm rooting for the prosecution. I'm rooting for the state in this. And it's not about police going down, it's about Derek Chauvin killed that guy, right? We watched it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we watched it. So, I mean, if he weren't a police officer, this wouldn't, there'd be very little debate about it, you know?
Right. Right. I got something on Twitter. It said something like, do we really need a week-long trial to judge a murder that we all watched?
Yeah.
And in terms of when someone plays audio and says, so-and-so said this and then plays it, there's a lot of power of suggestion in that. I've seen multiple things. I've been part of multiple things where so-and-so said this, here it is, and then, oh, no, I heard this. And literally, I've heard things where, oh, I heard it, what was suggested the first time around, and when someone corrected it, I said, or even said something different, I went, okay, now I'm hearing that. So the power of suggestion there says a lot. And when told, just listen to it,
I think the prosecution did a really smart thing there where they didn't say what they wanted the person to hear because they knew that the sound is jumbled up enough to where you really can't tell what is said. And if you hear it again and you listen closer and you're told to listen closer, then chances are you're going to hear something different.
Your brain's right? going
to
go
I mean, because prosecution has listened to this tape 1,000 times, and I'm sure they all came to the conclusion, I don't know what he said. And it probably, like, for you to think the first thing that that guy said was, I ate too many drugs, right? Like, that's insane, right? So I think, you know, and I won't play the audio because audio is hard to listen to because, again, we watch, you're literally watching a guy die. You're listening to it over and over, a man's last words, and they're pleading. And it's just, it's an awful thing to listen to. But, you know, I'll finish the statement. The reason why I'm going so hard for the state here is because of what we watched Chauvin do. And sort of the bigger implications, at least for that particular police department, right? All these police departments across the country, they don't run by the same set of rules. Every single one of them has their own operation standards. But this will change Minnesota. Maybe other places will take a look at what's happened today and realize, all right, we want to avoid that. We don't want to be in that sort of spotlight. We need to take a look at what we're doing, and we need to make some changes. And that goes into the idea of police reform.
And I just want to throw something out there at right-wing media. I don't remember I heard this on OAN or Fox or both, but I've heard multiple references saying that George Floyd had a lethal amount of fentanyl in his system. The doctor on the stand said nothing of that sort. So it's bantered around, you know, thing to say.
Well, the thing with fentanyl, to be fair, I mean, the thing with fentanyl is that, I mean, you know this as a chemical engineer, you don't need a lot of fentanyl to kill you.
I worked in a plant that made the stuff.
Right.
And that's not good. Well, yeah. The plant I worked out in California made fentanyl. And what people don't often know is what fentanyl is, it's a narcotic designed for people who are in such bad shape that they can't literally get a big enough dose of morphine to ease their pain. They make it in things like you have no veins that will stand up, so you make it so that if you lick a lollipop a couple times, you get enough in your body as if you got a shot of heroin.
Right.
And that's how potent the shit is.
I mean, they put it on a patch.
That's another way, yeah.
And I have a friend who had terrible knee pain, and they gave him a fentanyl patch, and it really fucked with him. But the point is that, yes, I think they you hear fentanyl, and because of the number of overdoses and really terrible cases, people just assume that any amount is lethal. But in reality, it's a thin line. I mean, you go from zero to 60 quick when you're fucking with a drug like fentanyl. There's
absolutely
no doubt.
Absolutely.
And you can make the argument that at some point in time, a fentanyl overdose in the future may very well have killed George Floyd, right? But, I mean, we're talking maybe not that day, but a week later, a month later, sure.
Okay, sure.
But that's not his relevant cause of death right here and right now. But that's the direction the defense is trying to go.
And it seems to have blown up in their face a little bit.
Right, right.
One thing that this is just a legal thing, I'm going to throw a random thing at you, but I understand why the prosecution goes first, right? The prosecution has to make a case, and if they have not made a case by the end of their wrapping up their side of it, then the defense can try to just dismiss offhand. Do you think it hurts as bad as I do that the prosecution will have been so far in the past by the time the defense wraps up its case? Because one thing that they said at the beginning of the trial is that the jury would not have access to the transcript. And that, when I was on jury duty, that was the case as well. And it infuriated me because we would argue about what was said. Oh, yeah, I heard this. I remember this. And we couldn't get back and see what was said. Just as a legal stand, as a lawyer, from a legal perspective, does that ever bother you, or am I just...
No, not really. Right. A big part of the reason is I don't like the idea of the transcript being made available to the jury because of objections, right? And things being stricken from the record. And it's already impossible for me to strike it from your brain.
Right.
Right. But if over that amount of time you forget about it or what have you, I don't want you going back through the transcripts and being able to see that and have it influence you, even if they put a line through it, right? Because remember,
they can't blank it out?
I haven't been in a courtroom in a while, so I don't know if they're using a better technology, but they were using a fucking stenographer before, like literally on a fucking mini typewriter. So I don't know what that product looks like now or what, you know, how that, but that's something, and that's part of the reason why you couldn't, because of the if the technology is better, where they can go back and strike it out, I feel a little bit more comfortable with it. But again, you still have the same problem. You make it to that point reading it, and you're like, oh, wait, this is blacked out. What happened here? Something along those lines. And I get what you're saying, but ultimately, one, you have the ability to take notes, so you can write down whatever you need. Do it.
It's tough, though.
It's tough, but I mean, you know, tough job. But, you know, the other part of it is you said, oh, it'll be such a long time. Like, remember, there's closing arguments, right?
True.
You know, so
and
you
the
know,
prosecution, the, gets the
prosecution
last
will come back and they will say they will have the last word in this sort of thing.
So you're saying the legal system's already thought about this,
right? Like, I mean, this is you know, okay. I mean, you know,
all right.
But I mean, it's important.
My question
though.
Is stricken from the show.
See, but yeah, no, I'm okay with it for those particular reasons.
Very good point. I forgot the prosecution gets to closing arguments, and all right. All right, so your buddy Hunter Biden is back in the Fox News crosshairs. There is
Look, let's just talk about Hunter Biden, okay? So the reason why he's back in the news, the Daily Mail, which is this British tabloid that really likes to dish dirt on people, seemingly it looks like they're real big fans of dishing dirt on American progressives, Democrats, liberals, whatever. You know, they released this article. They got a hold of the hard drive on Hunter Biden's computer that was dropped off at some computer shop in Delaware to a blind guy that Rudy Giuliani said had all this information on it. And the computer did have a lot of dirt on it. It didn't have the dirt on it as it related to Ukraine. You know, there's some stuff about Hunter Biden, you know, begging his dad to run for president to help, you know, to help him personally. But there's a lot of shit on it, right? And some of the stuff people are focusing on, there's pictures, like he took a ton of videos and pictures with him with prostitutes and, you know, and oh, they're like so salacious. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not my issue. I don't really, and it's honestly, I don't give a fuck. I mean, they're all adults, right? Like they're all consenting adults, whether he paid for it or not. I don't really give a shit. Like the dude had threesomes and the one picture I saw, the girls look moderately attractive. I'm not mad at him. But a lot of what was on there was really just about how fucked up his issues with addiction were, right? Like, there's text messages, you know, apparently it had to have been an iMac, right? Like a MacBook, because they were able to pull the text messages between him and his dad. And what you see is an addict. And an addict in a lot of pain. And you see the mind of an addict. And, you know, like, you know, had my struggles with alcohol and stepped away from drinking and, you know, went into counseling and things like that. So I've talked with a lot of people like Hunter Biden, right? Their dads weren't president of the United States, but they came from money. They came from, you know, their parents were, you know, doctors, politicians, what have you. And I see a lot of the same thing with those people that I know in real life. And that, like, it was all put on display. You know, he documented everything, oddly enough, you know, through his computer, and you could see it. And it's heartbreaking, because you see what this kid is going. This guy, he's 50 years old, kid, but you see what this person is going through. You know, he loses his mother at a young age. He loses his sister. You know, in the same accident at a young age. You know, his brother Bo dies. You know, he ends up having an affair with, or he ends up falling in love with Bo's wife after Bo has died. Which was scandalous and everything else, and you see
Joe. It's kind of gross, but
yeah, I don't even want to get into it. It's beyond weird, but you see the pain that this guy is going through, and then on the flip side, you see Joe Biden just being a dad who's just like, God damn it, I just want my son to make it. You know, I by make it I mean live, right? This dude, his addiction. I mean, he was addicted to crack, right? Like, I mean, you know, crack is. It's not weed. It's a dangerous drug that will get you killed, right? And
to your point earlier, Joe Biden lost his son, lost his wife, lost his daughter, and Bo died fairly recently, by 2015 or 16, and so I can imagine what it's like for him to deal with.
Right,
you know,
like,
I don't want to do this again.
Yeah, I mean, like he not only does he not want to lose his son, but I mean he doesn't want to lose his son, and he's watching his son basically, you know, slowly kill himself. And you see him trying to be supportive, just telling him that he loves him and trying to help him through. What do you need? I'll pay for you to go to the dentist to get your teeth fixed. You've got packages here. I'm not going to read them. I'm concerned because it's got life insurance information. How can I help you? And you see that in this. And that's kind of the worst part about it. And what makes it even worse is that Fox News is going out, and this is what, they're trying to capitalize on it, politically and financially. Once you see what this is, there's no smoking gun as it relates to, Ukraine and everything else. Like, Hunter Biden is an addict. Hunter Biden is an idiot, right? Hunter Biden got used by this Burisma company because his dad was Joe Biden, right? But in terms of Joe Biden being corrupt or being able to draw connections that this was all orchestrated by Joe Biden and Joe Biden somehow profited from it, that's not there. You don't see it. Hunter Biden is under investigation for tax fraud as it relates to, the Chinese deal and this Burisma stuff, which is all fine. Yeah. I mean, investigate him, yeah. Whatever. But the reality is how, people want this to bring down Joe Biden, right? Conservatives, Fox News, Trump supporters, they want to be able to say that because Hunter Biden is a piece of shit, right, and an idiot and an addict, that somehow has corrupted Joe Biden, and Joe Biden tried to pull off this deal with the Ukrainians somehow, and that's how they're trying to make the connection, and it's just, it's sad to see. I get it, all's fair in love and war and politics, but this is just, to me, it doesn't pass the smell test, and it goes beyond, I don't like you because you're a conservative and you're Fox News, or I don't like you because you're MSNBC or a progressive. We're just full abandoning the whole idea of the human element and being decent, in order to be able to try to tear somebody down when they're arguably at rock bottom.
And I've dealt with some personal issues with family members who had addiction issues, and I don't want to get into detail on it. I've talked about it a bit on the show. So having been on that side of trying to save someone from themselves and failing to do so, it is a brutal thing to go to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I lost my dad in 2013, and that played a role, and I'm still not over it.
Yeah. So it's just, it's sad to see. Take no pleasure in what's going on with Hunter Biden. It's not because of political affiliation. It's just because he's a person. And look, again, I've said this multiple times. He is an addict. He's also an idiot. And he's not good at anything, right? But Hunter Biden also doesn't hold political office, right?
Right.
As of right now, the motherfucker doesn't even have a job, right? So there's a humanitarian side to this, but that's about it. I don't really give a fuck about the rest of it. His dad is the president, but that's it, right? Like, people are like, oh, you're talking about Matt Gaetz, but you don't talk about Hunter Biden. Matt Gaetz is a sitting fucking congressman.
Right.
Right? Hunter Biden is a fucking drug addict idiot who doesn't have a job, right? Like, so I don't give a fuck what they cover about Hunter Biden, but the dude that sits in Congress right now that actually represents people down in Florida, that actually sits on committees and makes decisions on how money is spent in this country, yeah, I'm curious about what the fuck he's doing with fucking 17-year-old prostitutes. That's a legitimate story. Sorry.
Obviously, you're not apologizing to me, nor do you need to. But no, you're absolutely right. And Matt Gaetz is, if you did this on a fucking NBC drama, I would be saying, okay, you went too far.
Right.
Come on now. This guy can't have done all these things.
This is the type of shit that I said. I'm like, I'm at a point where, like, South Park is at a point where they can't make it up. Like, they're not making up stories anymore. They're literally writing what's happening, right? Like, they don't, and the only thing they do is they insert the four main characters, Stan, Kenny, and Cartman, and just say, all right, let's just add the kids, but we'll just tell the story. That's literally all they're doing. Because this is how fucked up our political situation is.
I have not seen a recent South Park, but that's on me.
I mean, and they don't even make South Parks every week anymore, right? Like, they literally, they'll make one, they made two back-to-back because of the whole, vaccine and all that stuff.
The pandemic special.
But, they don't have to. One, they've made a ridiculous amount of money. I mean, and, between everything they got going on with Broadway and South Park and don't forget basketball.
How could you ever forget basketball?
And Team America, obviously.
Team America was legitimately hilarious and brilliant. Basketball was not brilliant, but it made me laugh a whole lot.
Really,
really dumb.
Right.
One of the dumbest movies ever made, and I love it.
And Jenny McCarthy was actually pretty funny in that movie. But
she could suck the chrome off a trailer hitch. Oh God, I was like, this is so sophomoric, stupid, whatever.
And I love it.
And I love it.
But yeah, I mean, you know, with Matt Gaetz, he's got some issues because there's a report coming out that the guy's a tax collector down in Florida, and it sounds like he's going to roll.
Did you hear what his lawyer said? The tax collector's lawyer?
Which thing did he say?
When asked, should Matt Gaetz be worried? And he said,
oh yeah,
if I was Matt Gaetz, I'd be concerned or something to that effect.
Yeah. I mean, and so there's an interesting, you know, I saw, you know, Ellie Honig is an analyst for CNN, and his theory is that the Florida tax collector and his name is escaping me right now. No, I don't think that's it.
All right.
But the guy who is getting hit with sex trafficking charges and corruption charges down in Florida, the theory is that the reason why he rolled is because the prosecution said, give us Matt Gaetz and we'll cut you a deal. And I disagree with that. I think that when you have a situation like this, when you're talking about, you know, trafficking in younger girls, what do you want to say?
Joel Greenberg is the guy.
Oh,
name.
Greenberg. Okay.
I was looking it up.
So when you're dealing with sex trafficking and there's also talk about drugs and drug trafficking and other things, chances are Matt Gaetz isn't the big fish, right? Chances are he's not the guy at the top. Matt Gaetz, what I believe, is a big name.
He's a big fish.
No. He's a big name. He's a congressman, and we just talked about that. But in terms of his involvement in this, I think the best way to describe it is he dabbled. Now, listen, what he dabbled in, very bad. You know, flying girls, you know, in states paying for sex, 17-year-old, not acceptable. But I think there's a bigger fish in this in terms of who's controlling the trafficking. Where are the girls coming from? How are they being recruited? Where's the money going? Is there a drug element related to this? And where are the drugs coming from? Where are they going? I don't think Matt Gaetz is really involved with that. He doesn't seem like the type to really be a criminal mastermind. I think in these sort of situations, there are bigger pieces. And so it's like, give us Matt Gaetz, obviously, right? But we need X. Right, whoever that is, whoever it is at the top of the house of cards or whatever you want to call it, that's my personal opinion on how this is going down. Like, he's giving access to someone else. I'm sure he's giving them what they need for Matt Gaetz as well, but there's probably more to this.
So you're saying Gaetz is maybe the biggest political figure in this, but not the biggest criminal figure in this?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very good point. And Matt Gaetz is being a public figure and being so smugly punchable from a media perspective.
Yeah,
he's a dream.
I mean, and the big problem for him is he talks too much. And like, you're legit in the shit right now. Like, you've got a criminal investigation, you got somebody who's willing to roll because they recognize that their ass is a little too soft to go to prison. And so he needs to be talking a lot less. He should have never had that interview with Tucker Carlson. I think that could be very, very harmful for him. He's got serious issues with, you know, being able to trace where his money has gone using those apps. And, you know, again, he just talks too much. And I think, you know, I didn't think he was going to get charged, and I didn't see him going to jail. But I'm swaying on that. I'm starting to falter on that surety, and maybe he may end up talking himself into a cell if he's not careful.
He's very, very bad at keeping his mouth shut, and he also is kind of a man without a platform now, right? Fox wants nothing to do with him.
Yep.
OAN and Newsmax want nothing to do with him, and he was once the darling of those networks, and now they're like, yeah, we have a bigger story on off-track betting in the Himalayas, but we'll get right back to you.
Yep. I mean, that's exactly it. And, oh well, you know, play stupid games, you get stupid prizes.
Yeah, I mean, he is one of the most smugly punchable guys I've ever seen. I normally don't cheer for people's demises. In this case, I kind of am. And by kind of, I mean I am.
I mean, it's just, you know, he
play made with matches, you get burned. Yeah, first of
I mean,
all.
He's put himself in this situation, so whatever happens, happens. I think him being, you know, wealthy and, you know, a white right. politician.
And
I think,
having his ass covered by his dad for his whole life.
Yes. I mean, I think there's some things that are going in his favor, but, you know, whatever.
Yep. I'm convinced, though, he will not resign willingly. I think even if he is asked by every Republican member of the House to take...
If he gets indicted, bro, it don't
matter. Oh, no, I agree. Yeah. But this guy's not going to do the...
Yeah, I'm beyond that. I agree with you. He won't resign, but I do think, like, if he gets indicted, he's not going to have a choice. And he's going to get real indignant about it. And then someone behind the scenes, although there's not many people in the Republican Party that have balls. I don't know if any of them do, really. I mean, you were slobbing the knob of that Kinsman guy or whatever, but I don't know if anyone gives a shit about him. The guy out of Illinois can
oh, yeah. I forget his name already.
Yeah. But he left a real impression on you.
I think slobbing his knob is a bit too generous. I gave him credit for standing up to Trump in his own party.
Yeah, but I mean, I we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see.
Yep. This one won't be going away anytime soon. So you brought a story to my attention about a black soldier who was pulled over by police and ultimately gets pepper sprayed.
But yes. So his name is Karan Nazario. He's an Army lieutenant at a base in Virginia. And he gets pulled over because the officer said he didn't have a rear license plate and his window tint was dark. And then they also hit him with a looting police officer's charge. Because he didn't pull over right away. Now, there's, in this particular instance, it's good because there's body cam footage. And I say it that way because sometimes there's body cam footage, but it's useless. It doesn't really help give better perspective on the situation. But in this particular instance, it does. Because, Lieutenant Nazario he had just purchased a new truck. It was a, 2021 black Chevy Tahoe. And it didn't have license plate. It had the temp tag. And so it's new. He taped the temp tag inside the car in the back window. And it should be pointed out that in the body cam footage, you can see the temp tag through the camera on the officer, right? So, like, yes, the car was without a permanent rear license plate, but he did have the temporary tag taped in the back window, which you could see, and if you could see it with a body cam, you probably saw it with your own eyes, right?
I would hope so.
And so they pull him over, and he pulls into a gas station that's real lit. Now, he said he didn't pull over right away because everywhere along the road was dark, and from the time the lights went on to the time he pulls over into the BP gas station, it was about a minute and 40 seconds, right? Okay. So, now, mind you, the officers also admit, right? They also admit in their report that the tactic of driving to a well-lit area when being pulled over by police is well-known, and they knew what he was doing, right? But they still, when you watch the video, are screaming at him about eluding police and obstructing justice and things like that. So once he pulls over, now mind you, they're pulling him over because lack of a rear license plate, although he's got a temp tag, which you can see, and then they said his windows were tinted, too dark. So they proceed to try to get him out of the car. He asks why they're pulling him over. They never articulate why they're pulling him over and keep screaming at him to get out of the car. He says he knows his rights. He's in full uniform, by the way. He's an Army lieutenant in the Medical Corps, I believe. He's in full uniform. They reach into his car. They try to snatch him out. They end up pepper spraying him while he's in his car. His dog is in the car in a crate, which the dog ends up choking because a dog is, you know, not impervious to pepper spray. They pull him out.
Did the dog die?
No, the dog didn't die. But they pull him out of the car, allegedly, you know, hit him with the baton in the knees, and then they handcuff him. And all of that, they end up letting him go. No charges. And allegedly they said, you know, if you are able to be cool about this, then, you know, we won't charge you. But if you're not going to be cool, then we're going to charge you, take you down the station, and you're going to have a lot of issues with your military career. Now, I don't know, you know, that was what was allegedly said. That part isn't on the video, on the tape. But, you know, I mean, look, these officers threatened, you know, they said, you're going to ride the lightning. you know, which is a phrase that, you know, you're going to get the electric chair or you're going to die. He said that he was, you know, he was concerned for his safety. The officers said in the video,
you should be. Yeah.
This does not look well for these. This is not probably going to not go well for these particular police officers. And this hit home for me because very similar thing happened to me.
I remember this.
You know,
yours was a stolen plate, not a...
Yeah, so I worked downtown. You know, here in Cleveland, I parked in an open lot all the time. And I I'm assuming that it happened while I was at work. But my front license plate got stolen, and I had no idea. I wasn't aware of it. You know, like I go and I get in my car like everybody else.
Every time I get my truck, I check to make sure the front license plate
I mean, the thing is, well, the thing is that the police officer, in my situation, one of the questions he asked me after they finally told me, so what happened was, you know, I get home, I'm not far from my house, and I get pulled over about 6 o'clock, I'm coming home from work. You know, officer, you know, is asking me, he asked me multiple times if I knew why he had pulled me over. I didn't know. I was like, no, I have no idea. I was obeying the law. You know, I'm just gotten home from work. I haven't had anything to drink, nothing. I don't know why you're pulling me over. He ends up pulling me out of the car, you know, puts me in handcuffs, puts me in the back of the car. I ask why he's doing that. I tell him that I understand my rights, you know, in terms of illegal searches and seizure and due process. And then he, you know, kind of gets an attitude with me about, well, what do you think, you're a lawyer? And I'm just like, well, I don't think that I am. I actually am. Which is not apparently the appropriate response because he got more aggressive at that point. I get shoved in the back of the car. They start to search my car, right? Which, you know, I can't do anything because I'm in the back of the car. The windows are up. Another officer has at that point arrived and then tries to kind of determine what the hell is going on. They have a conversation and the officer ends up coming back to the car. The second one lets me out, you know, and just says that he asked me if I was aware that I was missing a license plate. And I said, I'm looking at my truck from the back, and I said, well, no, my license plate is there. He's like, no, your front license plate. And I said, what? No, I don't know, right? And I had no idea. He says it is, and I explained to him that, you know, I was like, I worked downtown. I don't know. I didn't, you know, when I got in, I didn't see it. And then the other officer says, oh, you didn't properly inspect your vehicle before you got in it, right? It's like... Okay, you know, I mean,
every day I get up, first thing I do, yeah, are my license plates, you know, there?
I mean, and so now I have to, I didn't inspect my vehicle before I got in it, and then they say, well, you know, if it's truly missing, then you, or if you truly believe it was stolen, you need to file a police report. And I said, okay, fine, I would like to file a police report that my license plate was stolen. And they said, no, you need to call the precinct. And then they both get in their cars and they drive off. And then, you know, I go home safe, one piece. You know, wasn't pepper sprayed, but all that over a missing license plate.
And if I recall, the officer approached you with his hand on his gun.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I don't think if... I mean, I understand that missing license plates could be an indication of something, whatever.
But
to approach a vehicle with the willingness to draw a weapon over that is... I can't believe that's proper procedure. And it's... Just as a, I mean, I've never been trained as a police officer.
It's missing a front license plate, but mind you, the back license plate is on me. They followed me, or he,
that's a good
he
point. Followed they could, me. They run your plate and say...
Run the plate, and it's not hard to figure out what's going on. So the fact that they made that big of a deal over it, it just left me disenchanted with the police.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. This was about, you were still living in this neighborhood then, yeah. So this was about 5 years ago or yep. So. And I remember how frustrated and pissed off you were.
Yeah.
And when people talk about white privilege, that's an example of that, in my opinion, because had I been in the exact same situation, I might well have gotten pulled over. And if I had, my guess is the way it would have gone down is this. Sir, do you know your front license plate? Sir, you don't have a front license plate. Do you know why? No, I don't. It was stolen. Okay, yeah, file a police report. Go take care of that.
Right.
My guess is that's how it would have gone down. Maybe this cop was not going to be an asshole to anyone, but it's hard to ignore, especially in this neighborhood, which is mostly white.
Yeah.
It's hard to ignore the racial aspect of that. And whenever people say white privilege isn't a real thing, well, I don't have white privilege. I had to work for it. That's not what it's about. It's about not dealing with that shit.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, so I mean, so now the officer is suing, you know, Karan. The tenant who was pulled over in this case in Virginia, he's suing those two police officers. And the video evidence is not good for them, so I strongly would urge them to settle.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, you can fight it, but I don't think you want to.
The more public attention this gets, the worse you're going to look.
Yeah.
Where was this again?
Virginia.
Virginia, okay.
Yeah.
I had Massachusetts in my head for some reason.
Commonwealth.
I think that's exactly why I read Commonwealth.
Yeah.
I do think that's it. All right, so we'll see if that leads to anything, but it's an example of, I'm like, the guy's in military uniform, and the whole evading thing, if he would have, punched the gas and... okay, that's one
right.
Thing.
Yeah, but because he was driving below the speed limit, and then like I said, a minute and a half, and he pulls into a gas station that's well lit.
The well lit thing is good for both
everybody involved, right? Everybody involved.
I mean, I would rather be in a well lit situation if I'm rolling down my windows, because if it's pitch black and I'm having a police officer approach my car, I want him to see as much as possible. There's no weapons. There's no whatever. Right. And you would have thought they would have seen the fucking uniform and said, "Okay, you're probably not."
Right.
A problem.
Let's talk. Why don't you have a license plate? Oh, I have a temp tag. It's in the back. Oh, okay, I see it. Brand new car. Oh, nice truck. All right, see you later. Have a good night.
You have a great night. Sorry, we pulled you over. That's how it should have gone down, but of course it did not.
So this next story, moving along. So Black Lives Matter, right? The actual organization, the nonprofit. I'm not a big fan, right?
You've been vocal about that.
But one of the big reasons why is because I felt like... There was a lot of rhetoric that came out of the organization. They like to get in and mix things up, and I don't think it's always positive, because it's just like, oh, we're highlighting X and Y and Z. It's just like, okay, well, it's been well, we know it, right? Like, so what are we doing to fix it? You could scream and yell and point at it all you want, but at some point in time, we gotta take this thing by the reins and really start to address these issues, right? And we know that Black Lives Matter has received a shit ton of money from people who have donated, and they finally released their financial numbers, right? So in 2020, they pulled in $90 million, which is a shit ton of money. And they also released what they've been doing with their money, which I thought was, critical. And for the most part, I liked what I saw. Money went into other organizations that were doing very specific things to help help address the issues of income inequality and healthcare inequality and many of the issues facing, lower class black communities and urban centers across the country. And, I've said this all along, whether it was Colin Kaepernick or whoever, like, if you're gonna make all sorts of political noise and make, and piss off the status quo, right? Like, if you're going to do it, that's fine. But you better have something behind it besides, I'm just going to protest. I'm just going to protest. What are you going to do to help make the situation better? So Colin Kaepernick literally put his money where his mouth is, right? Along with sacrificing his career. In the NFL, he also donated, $1 million+, and I'm sure more than that by now, to various causes and created these, various groups and organizations to help address the issues that he was concerned about. So fast forward to Black Lives Matter. Like I said, there's some fundamental things that I have issues with them. But at the same time, This I can appreciate. One, the transparency in the numbers. It's important that people see exactly how much money is coming in, but it's also important to see where that money is going, right? If you're just collecting it and you're sitting on it and you're buying, sports cars and yachts and all that other stuff, well, that's not a great look, right?
Right.
Now you're just the same people that you're complaining about, and it's even worse because you're doing this when people are providing you this money to actually help the thing that you're saying you're all about. But we're seeing that, and so I give them kudos for that. Not only being transparent, but actually the actions that they're taking. One of the big things is they want to set up an even larger fund. They want to a lot of the money they haven't dispersed because they want to set up a fund that will be able to directly address, housing issues and job opportunities and training. And they want a large enough fund where they don't have to depend on outside resources, because the reality is, you have all these corporations saying, oh, we're going to invest all this into black businesses and the black this and black that. But we've been hearing that for, 20 years and not seeing much of it. And I think what they're trying to do is to be able to say, look, we're going to fund our own initiatives. We don't need Chase Bank. We don't need GM. We don't need Target, whoever is making all these claims, if they want to work with us, fine. But in order for us to advance the mission, we don't need their help. We have enough money to fund X, Y, and Z fully. you know, from start to finish, from cradle to grave, to see the results over this amount of time. And that's what they're trying to establish. And I think that's a smart move. I think it's the right move. And, you know, a lot of urban centers need to kind of follow that lead, right? And it's going to look different everywhere. And what I mean by that is, look, the government's not going to come in and save you, right? Just because Biden and Kamala Harris are president and vice president, like, that's not the end-all be-all. They're going to try. You know, this infrastructure bill has a lot in it that could help address these issues. But ultimately, you know, will that money trickle down to where you live on the east side of Cleveland or East Cleveland or Youngstown, Ohio, or outside of Buffalo or wherever? Detroit, will that money trickle down to you? I don't know. You can't wait. You got to figure out how to start to kind of get these things moving internally. And being able to go to Black Lives Matter and say, hey, we need $10 million for this particular initiative. This is what it is. This is how we do it. And they come back and say, we can't give you 10, but we can give you 5, or we can give you 2, or whatever. We can get you started.
We can help you raise money.
Like, those are the sort of things that you have to start to do. You know, being able to go and buy, you know, a bunch of people get together in Detroit and say, we're going to buy these 2 city blocks. They're the most troubled. The property's worth nothing. We want to buy the blocks, and we want to develop them and put 10... you know, brand new houses that people can afford to live and start. Okay, fine. Then that's the sort of thing that Black Lives Matter will be able to support to help directly impact the very things that they set this organization up for, and to help address the changes that need to happen, so we can stop seeing some of the disparities and some of the abuses that have caused so much angst over the last few years.
And the inequality that the system sort of fosters because... Yeah. I mean, you know, whether it's deliberate or a side product, it's what's been happening.
Right.
And this is an attempt to fix that. So that's a good thing.
Right.
Can we talk about another organization that talked about their financials?
Absolutely.
So the NRA has declared bankruptcy, and they're now defending why they're declaring bankruptcy. And they're being sued because of what I've been saying for fucking years, that Wayne LaPierre wearing his, how was it, $5,000 suits?
$20,000.
$20,000 suits. Yeah. Take it out. You know, I don't know what the dollars were for the dinners he was taking lobbyists and congressmen out were, but he was shitting all over NRA people. Wayne LaPierre has been shitting all over you for years, throwing your money into $20,000 suits and real fancy dinners and hunting trips and all this shit. Oh my, okay, fine.
So you got to punt, because you're actually, you're hurting yourself here. So
don't save me for myself, Steve.
I'm gonna, because like I'm on the show too. But Wayne LaPierre is a problem for the NRA, whether they want to admit it or not. And the reason why is, to your point, like, yeah, he's been burning through a lot of money excessively for not good reasons, right? Now, they're defending him in a way because they kind of have to, because they're tied to him. But, you know, like I said, the $20,000 suit is completely unnecessary. The fact that he was flying, you know, from New York to L.A. private jet to pick up those suits on a regular basis, whether it was monthly or, you know, semi-monthly or whatever... and then his excuse, I have to fly private because that's our rule, because, you know, I'm such a, you know,
such a nefarious shaker.
Right, like, it's just like, you know, people want to take me out. But, like, there were other things where...
Well, then, Wayne, be a good guy with a gun and protect yourself.
Exactly. But there were other things, like, I mean, you know, things for his dog, veterinary bills, you know... buying boats and cars and things like that for himself, like that sort of thing. You know, those are the sort of bills that he's putting on the NRA. Now, where I will say you kind of went off track there was, oh, the fancy dinners with the lobbyists. Well, that's what lobbying is.
I understand that.
Listen, I work where I need to work. Like, that's what it is. It's expensive dinners. Okay,
It's expensive dinners.
And
it's
whether you're in New York or Washington D.C., you're not taking someone that you need to convince to provide you money. You're not taking them to fucking Arby's or Ponderosa, right? Like, I mean, this is. Like, I'm fine with the expensive dinners, but, right? Like, you're that part. I don't think. Look, whether you like it or not, that's just what it is, and I don't have an issue with it. Right?
Okay,
that's fucking lying.
I want disclosure though. Because I don't think... I've talked to so many NRA members who I'm friends and family with...
Who don't know shit.
But they don't know shit. Right. And they think, Wayne LaPierre is fighting for my rights. Now, if you want to say lobbying is part of it, yeah, it is. But when you dig a fucking inch deep into most of those cases, the shit that they use to try to scare their members into throwing them more money is such nonsense.
Okay.
And
Well, that's different. Like, you got to, look, if you're building a case to take a guy out, you need to build the case appropriately. So what I'm saying is the things that he was doing that you could legitimately say are lobbying, whether it's taking someone to a really expensive dinner or taking someone on a golfing trip or taking someone to fucking Bermuda or whatever, right? Like, you don't like the way it looks and feels, but that's just what it is. And then your issue is with lobbying as a whole. Which is fine, but I'm not going to hold that against him, right? Like, as much as you don't like it and don't like him, that's not where he's fucking up. Where he's fucking up is where you started, where I need $20,000 suits and I need to fly a private jet to get there. Right. Or I need to go, you know, I need this yacht. Like, bitch, right. you don't need a fucking yacht. Right. You want a yacht and you don't want to pay for it out of your pocket. So you're going to use NRA money to pay for it. That's different. Right. Like, that's abusing his position. That's abusing the money that people are throwing in where they think that he's fighting for them. And it's bullshit. I agree with you that Wayne LaPierre is a bag of shit that abuses the money and he uses it. And he's basically stealing and embezzling. But,
and laughing at the people who are kissing his ass.
Right, but you need to make sure that you're identifying how that's happening. And they lay it out in this case. When you go through and read it, when you read it and you see what he's doing, I mean, it's obvious, right? Now, the other thing that I think is just fantastic about what they're doing, because it's so ridiculous, right? They're filing for bankruptcy, but yet they're admitting that financially they're fine. Right, they said they're more than solvent. Right, our organization is financially robust, I think is what they use. Right, in the case
by definition is a conflict. Right,
and then what they're saying is the whole reason we're filing for bankruptcy and we're moving to Texas is because the case against us that the attorney general has filed would ruin us. It would be really bad, and we can't disprove what they're saying. So instead, we want to file for bankruptcy and run our asses to Texas, where they'll be much more friendly to us, and then it shuts this case down here, right? Like, so their defense isn't we didn't do what they said, and if we continue with this case, it will ruin us financially, which is why you file for bankruptcy. It's we can't win that case because because on the merits it's true. So we want to kind of defeat it over here on a technicality and then move somewhere else where those bad people in New York can't come and get us. And the other part about it is that Wayne LaPierre did this on his own, right? So they've got a board, they've got members, and, not the, average Joe paying memberships around here, but, you've got your board members. He didn't tell them that he was filing for bankruptcy. This was news to them. Some of them are pissed. Some of them are playing along, but they're not doing a good job of hiding their emotions about it. And so, if their bankruptcy gets tossed out, they're dead in the water.
And good. And I mean, you speak of your Second Amendment advocacy all the time on the show. I'm with you on most of it. But I think the NRA has done more to hurt the American gun owner and the American sportsman in the last 20 years than maybe any other organization.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it on the show. Like they completely missed the mark. And part of that because of Wayne LaPierre, right? And
greed
and using race and everything else. When they should have been on the other side of it, promoting mental health and saying, listen, if you've got anger issues, if you're mad, don't go out and buy a gun, go talk to a therapist, right? Like, that's the type of shit that they should be saying. Or, they should be in the inner city working with kids to deal with, how can we keep you out of the drug life so you're not buying, illegal guns, right? Let's keep you good and clean and sober and everything else so you can have opportunities, so you can have a normal job and use your money to go buy legal guns and you don't have to worry about getting in trouble. That was the move, right? That was the move 30 years ago.
If they gave a fuck about that, but they don't.
But they didn't. It came down to greed, right? They're just like, we're good. Like, as long as we got middle-class white people, scared of black people.
Shoveling money at us.
Instead of going to the broader group, and now, by the time they bring on a guy like Corleone Noir, right, who's a really good mouthpiece for the Second Amendment, although I think sometimes he gets a little too much into the rhetoric. By the time they bring him on, it's a little too late. They're far down the path, and now they're kind of stuck in a situation where they're saying black people with guns is bad, but now we need to act like we haven't been saying that all this time, so let's bring on this black guy. And it just, it worked for a quick minute until all of a sudden, the people who were producing NRA TV saying black people with guns are bad were also producing Corleone Noir's show.
Right, okay.
Right?
I thought you were saying that rhetoric worked for a minute. I'm like, it's worked for a couple of decades.
No.
I misunderstood you. All right, one other story that I threw your way that I think is, I'm kind of real. All right, I'm being a bad person by bringing this up, but yet I find it hilarious. a group called White Lies Matter, not Lives, Lies Matter, in Selma, Alabama, has stolen a monument. It was a stone chair built for Jefferson Davis, the former president of the Confederacy, that he actually never got to sit in because it was built 4 years after his death in like 1890-something or 80-something. Whatever. It was stolen, and a ransom note was sent that said, if you do not admit these things, these matters about, you know, how black people basically built America and were not allowed to participate in it, we are going to turn Jefferson Davis's stone monument chair into a toilet. So do the right thing or roll shit on your monument. I'm not encouraging vandalism. I'm not encouraging theft. But I can't deny that I find this really funny.
I had to, is this a real story? But it is a real story. It is hilarious. I think it goes to
crime can be funny.
Right. But I think it goes to a broader point about these Confederate monuments, right? Like, Trump made it a big deal that, like, oh, if you tear these down, it's a crime and blah, blah, blah. And all that. But the reality is you got to think back to the reality of what these monuments are for and what they represent, right? In some instances, they were an olive branch to the Confederate States. Like, hey, like, we'll honor your guy. Like, you know, play nice with us for commerce and everything else. And some of them were purely about intimidation, right? Like, you know, black people don't get too uppity, and here's a statue to remind you of this is where this can go. You know, this is what we were willing to do to keep you slaves, so here you go. You know, I mean, it's just like that's it. You know, whenever I hear Confederacy and the statue, like, it's not a joke. It's to
visceral,
me,
yeah.
Right? The shit was like, these people, if they would have had it their way, where the fuck would we have been? People are like, oh, well, slavery would have ended anyway because of the cotton gin. So I don't know what you're making. Like, bitch, there's not other shit that fucking needs, but like, are you fucking kidding me? So,
no, I understand that there is a very serious aspect to this.
Yeah.
I just think that the we're going to turn your precious monument into a toilet, which was part of the ransom note. And apparently the ransom note was done in like 1800s type script.
Calligraphy.
Yes. That's funny. It's, and
God, I hope they use like a felt pen or a
quill pen or
quill pen with an inkwell. To write it out, that would be great.
Fountain pen.
Yes, fountain pen.
All right, man. It was about time to wrap it up, but we got to talk about the passing of DMX.
Yeah. Earl Simmons, a.k.a. DMX. He, different type of artist. Completely different. We haven't seen anything like this guy. I don't know if you'll really see anything like him again. You know, pretty much anybody after is going to be an imitation. You know, he burst on the scene in 98 with the album called It's Dark and Hell is Hot. That was in, like, May. And then in December, he dropped Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood. Both albums, number one, basically simultaneously, which was completely unheard of, especially for a hip-hop album at the time. And he just blew the doors off. I mean, the dude was literally king of the world for about a 3 to 5 year period. There was a performance he did at Woodstock in 99 where it is just this massive crowd, and he has the entire crowd. Like, if you've seen Bohemian Rhapsody, the story about Queen and Freddie Mercury.
In London.
And they show, you know, the scene at Live Aid.
Right.
Imagine that, but bigger, right? I mean, just this massive crowd that goes for, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And this whole, he has the whole crowd moving. It's an amazing, it was an amazing performance. Now, look, his lyrics were incredibly brutal, right? Like, there's one song in particular that is just, like, that even I said, whoa, at a young age, and I hear it now, and I'm like, oh, Earl, Jesus. And I don't apologize for his lyrics, not for him. He would never apologize for him. He's one of those guys that literally spoke from the heart. And his experiences are very raw and they're very real. His whole life story is fucked up. The dude went through some really unspeakable, terrible things as a young kid. You know, he grew up in, you know, Mount Vernon, New York, in you know, very rough times. You know, did a lot of bad shit, but also always kind of fought, you know, devil on the shoulder versus angel on the other shoulder. And, you know, that kind of drove his addiction issues. And, you know, when he burst on the scene, I was, you know, 18 at the time. Loved the music, was drawn to it. You know, bought both those albums and, you know, listened to them on repeat for years. You know, just for years, always. And, you know, that grit and that anger, like, I've always kept it with me. And there were, you know, no, listen, I didn't go through some of the things that he went through. But, look, you grew up on the north side of Youngstown in the late 90s with the violence that we saw, with the drugs that we saw, with everything else. Like, you better have that, right? And I wasn't in the thick of it. I wasn't a drug dealer. I didn't, you know, my family wasn't in it. But I lived around it. I was, you know, I had to walk through it every day to school. We talked about what I've seen just walking down the street in terms of guns, drugs, everything else. And so, you know, you got to have a certain level of grit. And then that was I used that as a tool. And, you know, he had a major influence on my life. And through knowing people from New York, from around where he was from, he was a good dude. He was a good dude. He was just troubled and he was very flawed. He made a lot of mistakes and he paid for a lot of those mistakes. He spent a lot of time in jail throughout his career.
There was a website dedicated to that. It was like, isdmxinjail.com.
Right, I mean, and he went to jail. A lot of it was taxes. Right. I mean, impersonating police officers, FBI officers, drug charges, everything, right? I mean, the dude, but in the end, he always tried to be a good person, and he was always, there's no one in the industry that has dealt with him that has something bad to say about him, you know? And he is one of the people, you know, like, I rarely will hold an artist, you know, as a person. I can separate the person from the art.
Sure.
And the only person I can't do that for is R. Kelly, right? My issues with R. Kelly are because I was just so close to it when it happened, I just can't separate the artist from the person. I can't listen to his music anymore. But I heard not too long ago, probably about a year ago, I heard a story where DMX went to go record with R. Kelly, and there was a very strange situation going on there with R. Kelly and a young girl. And DMX busts in the studio and, like, literally goes to kick the door in, right, where R. Kelly is allegedly in with some girl and has to get carried out by his security. And, you know, it's just like, look, and he tells R. Kelly, like, look, you better not come out, because next time I see you, I'm fucking you up, because I know what you're doing in there. And if you're still here when I get back, you don't have enough security. Right. And apparently he went back and everybody was gone. So, I mean, he just, like, he was a different cat, right? He was just a different cat, or I should say dog, because he, you know, loves himself some pit bulls. You know, there's also a story where, you know, remember George Zimmerman, they were going to do this boxing match, right,
for charity. Yeah.
And DMX won the bid. And they, you know, and DMX said, look, I don't care. Like, he says he does boxing as a hobby. When I get in the ring, there are no rules. I will break every rule because I'm going to fuck him up. George Zimmerman canceled the fight.
You know what? I don't like this idea.
Right. And he was just a different cat. And, you know, like I said, he was rough around the edges for sure. It really hurt my heart when I knew how this was going to end when I heard that he had overdosed and he was in the hospital. You knew it. And it was time. And I think, honestly, he's one of those people that, you know, he can finally rest. You know, I mean, he's been in turmoil for so long. You hope he did enough good that if you believe in an afterlife, he went to the right place. You know, he's going to be missed. I'm glad that he was able to get kind of his due. He did a thing with Snoop Dogg a few months back during quarantine that was really popular on Instagram, and a lot of people threw, you know, their proverbial flowers at him then. So I'm glad he was able to get that. You know, there's one last story about him. He was in a movie called Exit Wounds with Steven Seagal.
I remember that.
And there was a girl who played his daughter in that movie, right? And she was young at the time. And he ended up becoming her godfather in real life.
Oh.
And, you know, helping her as she, you know, kind of navigated her own career through. And ended up being one of his, like, kind of closest and best friends.
So she was a child star that he kind of...
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one of those stories, you know, I mean, there's a story, like, when she turned 18 that they're in a car together, you know, she's singing, like, a Miley Cyrus song, but DMX is putting in his spin on it, right? Which is, like...
I'm sure it was.
Right, you know, I mean, it just, like, you know, and there's plenty, I'm sure if you go and dig around the Google box, you will find some plenty fucked up stories about him. like I said, I don't apologize for him, but I will say he will be missed.
You know, I was a huge DMX fan. And I was a DMX fan because I first heard him, maybe not first, but I first paid attention to him. He, when Dave Chappelle did the Killing Him Softly special in 1999, he entered and exited that show with Party Up by DMX.
Yes.
I'm like, this song is fucking awesome.
Yes.
I mean, that song is so fucking awesome.
I joke around with my friends that DMX made that song for 25-year-old white guys.
Because I was 30, but...
Yeah, but I mean, that is, like, it's funny because, you know, everybody, you know, all my white friends talking about their favorite DMX songs, right? It's that song. It's,
or X Gonna Give It To You.
X Gonna Give It, right? Like, it's those songs.
And Rough Riders also a cool song.
Right, and the Rough Riders Anthem is also a great song. The remix is 10 times better with DJ Clue, but, you know, those are really fun songs. But those, like, when my DMX playlist ain't the same DMX playlist y'all was listening
probably
to.
Probably not. I actually worked out yesterday to those three songs because I just heard you pass.
It's funny. I was at the gym before we recorded, and one of the boxing MMA guys, you know, he grabbed me and asked me about sparring. I was like, nah. He's like, what are you listening to today? I was like, X all day. He's just like, yeah, man, me too, last 3 days. And I just, you know, like I said, my DMX playlist is probably different than yours.
I actually would like to hear it, I think.
It's dark, bro. It's dark. I'm curious. You might, like, if we're driving, you might, you know what, why don't you let me out?
Can we go back to Hall & Oates?
I try to shield you from these things, my
friend. Don't protect me. I try to shield you from these things.
I know you're innocent and pliable.
Perhaps. And another thing that hit me about this was DMX died at 50, and I'm staring 50 right down the barrel, and I'm like, you know what? When I see that, I'm like, I like to say, wow, that's way too young, and it is.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's my age.
Yeah. Take care of yourself, fucker.
I'm trying. All right. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter.
One other thing.
Oh, go ahead.
Your mom now knows you smoke weed.
My mom now knows I smoke weed, yes.
You're almost fucking 50.
One, you're being a dick.
It's fucking two. Dick. I'm not the dick here.
How am I the dick?
You're afraid to tell your mom you smoke weed. You're fucking 50.
I'm not 50.
You know, I was hoping.
I am not 50.
I was hoping that when you told her, she was just like, yeah, one, I knew, and yeah, me too. Okay. I knew that. I knew.
That did not happen.
I know it didn't happen.
She did say it's not a big deal, and please don't drive. You're a dick. It had been known in my family for years that I had never done it, and we've talked about it on the show a bit, and I've kind of tiptoed. I got tired of tiptoeing, and I told my mom, if you listen to the show and hear this, you know, it's true. And so I owned up. And anyway, thanks for...
You're a good Catholic boy.
We're done. I'm a shitty Catholic boy now. Jeez. We're done. We're at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you for listening. We're done.